Welcome to the Living with Alzheimer's podcast. On this show, we share Ginger's journey and speak with subject matter experts about a variety of dementia-related topics. Ginger, a former English teacher and librarian, was diagnosed with Alzheimer's in 2019. This diagnosis has changed her world and has given her a unique perspective on life and living. I'm Christoph, Ginger's son and full-time caregiver. I've created this podcast as a way to share the best practices I'm learning about caring for a person with dementia. Along the way, we'll document my mother's journey through her unique storytelling. You can subscribe to the Living with Alzheimer's podcast and find all the resources we discuss at lwalz.com. In this episode of Living with Alzheimer's, I interview Steve Mullen, co-host with his wife Jennifer for Caregiving Gen X Style, a podcast by Gen Xers for Gen Xers who are taking care of their aging parents. Steve describes many of the unique caregiving challenges faced by Gen Xers who are often raising children while simultaneously caring for aging parents. Steve shares how draining caregiving can be and some of the practical ways families and friends can help. And we also discuss some of the key caregiving insights and resources that you can find on their Caregiving Gen X Style podcast. As a side note, the book that Steve and I mentioned, but neither of us can remember the name of as we're talking about it, is The 36-Hour Day, A Family Guide to Caring for People Who Have Alzheimer's Disease and Other Dementias. Now in its 7th edition, The 36-Hour Day is a book full of practical advice for caregivers. Well, hi, Steve, and welcome to the Living with Alzheimer's podcast. I appreciate that you came today.
Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it, too.
Yeah. Well, you and your wife have an interesting podcast. It's called Caring Gen X Style, and I am curious, as soon as I saw the title, I was curious, what's unique about Gen X caregiving?
Well, the podcast is Caregiving Gen X Style, and Gen X is a bit of a different generation. We were the first ones to deal with mass divorce. We were the first ones where mass amounts of mothers went back to work while their kids were still in school. And, you know, as a result, we were kind of left on our own. This is all stereotypes. It's not everybody, obviously, sure. But it's a large part of the generation. We were left on our own after school. You come home, you get yourself a sandwich, you watch TV, you go out and play with your friends. You were just kind of left to your own devices.
Yep.
And, you know, parents were kind of doing their own things. And we, like I said, we were left in some cases to raise ourselves. And what's interesting about that is now that our parents are getting older, we are having to take care of them. So it creates an interesting dichotomy with the way we are raised and the way we're now as adults. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of Gen Xers out there who said, you didn't raise me. Why should I take care of you now? Mm-hmm. It's actually created, from what I understand, it's a boom for the therapy industry.
Okay. Yeah. So it's interesting because in our correspondence before this conversation, you mentioned that I was... because I said I was at the tail end of the boomer beginning of the Gen X, and you said there was a specific name for that.
Yeah, it's a micro generation called Generation Jones.
Okay.
You're not quite a boomer. You're not quite a Gen X. And I'm really fascinated by generational theory. Mm-hmm. You know, and at the end of Gen X and right before millennial, they call them Xennials.
Okay.
And you know, it's just kind of a nod to understanding that someone your age has very little in common with someone who was born in 1946.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And it's interesting though, too, because I did experience some of that. You get home and you take care of yourself for several hours, you know, watching TV and mm-hmm. you know, doing your homework. You better do your yep. homework. Both of my parents were educators.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and, you know, so yeah, here I am now, you know, in a role of taking care of my mom, and I had definitely assisted before my dad passed with him. And It was an interesting turnabout because there was a lot of time that I spent taking care of myself and not them taking care of me. And so now here I am taking care of them. It is an odd juxtaposition of how things were. That's
It
interesting.
is. And I have an older brother who actually is only, I know we discussed when you were born. I won't even mention it. If you want to mention it, you go ahead. But my brother was born about, I think, a year later than you. Or actually, I'm sorry, earlier than you, sooner than you. And I've said before, he didn't grow up really in the same world as I did. I often tell him we didn't even have the same parents. And we're about 6.5, 7 years apart. And that's, a pretty decent amount, and our parents were in a different point in time, and at that time my father was working near the home. He was a very typical dad. He left at 8 a.m., came back around 6, and my mom was working from home. By the time I was elementary school age, my father was traveling a lot, and my mother worked outside the home. So
Totally different.
just totally different. And I don't know that he fully understands that, but believe me, I do.
Well, you were there to watch both.
Exactly.
And he kind of disappeared when it was your turn.
Yeah.
So, my cousin has a similar situation. She's the baby. And, now that she and her siblings are caring for their mom, and previously when they were caring for her dad with health issues, the whole dynamic of who was in the house when and what they experienced with their parents was really different, and it had a lot to do with the perspectives that they had about what should be done now. And so it is interesting that generational theory comes into how we respond and what our perspectives are about what caregiving should be for a parent who needs it.
Right, exactly.
So that's kind of a setup for my next question, which is what prompted you to start the podcast? What is the podcast? Tell me that, and the listeners. And then also, what prompted you to start it?
We are, my wife and I are a couple of Gen Xers, obviously. And we say it's by Gen Xers for Gen Xers who are finding themselves taking care of their elderly parents or other elderly loved ones. And, we don't lean too far into the whole Gen X thing. We'll throw something in there every so often, a movie reference or a song or whatever. But really, the reason we started it, my wife's mother, my mother-in-law, has been, she's had health problems off and on as long as I've known her. And by the way, I've been married 28 years. And I've known my wife for 30. So that's a long time.
That is a long
And
time.
but until a few years ago, they were kind of low level. She has rheumatoid arthritis, so she's always had trouble getting around as long as I've known her. She also has osteoarthritis and other issues here and there. But in the summer of 2022, we really started going through it hot and heavy. My mother-in-law had to go into the hospital. She had a colon blockage and had to have a large portion of her colon removed. And that led to, a 3 week hospital stay, another 3 weeks in rehab. Right about the time she was back home and becoming independent again, my mother had a spinal cord compression in her back. She'd had back problems off and on for quite a while, and she'd had a couple of surgeries, but something slipped and her spinal cord was compressed and she lost use of her right leg, most of the use of her right leg. And so, this was tail end of the pandemic. My wife and I had been, obviously, we were bringing groceries to our mothers and we were visiting a little more often than usual, but this was where it really started. So my mother had to go in for emergency surgery to make sure she wasn't totally paralyzed. And that led to a 3 or 4 week hospital stay, 2 weeks in a rehab institute, and another 4 weeks in skilled nursing and rehab. And she never went back home. She was living independently when this happened. She left the house one day and never came back. She had to move into assisted living just because she's not really able to live independently anymore. And so this all happened over the span of 6 months. And toward the end of it, when my mother was in skilled nursing, my wife and I went over to visit her and we took her up to the activities. She wanted to go play bingo. And we left and went to a sports bar afterwards. There's a sports bar right nearby. You could almost walk there. And we sat down and we were in a bad place. I think we were kind of getting toward the end of this, and we were depressed and sad and not really sure what was going to happen with anybody. Right. And of course we decided to have a drink or two, well, maybe three. And, you know, toward the middle of this, we said, you know what? We should write a book. And of course we were a little tipsy at this point, but we should write a book. And so I actually went home that day and started writing chapters to a book. That book ended up being turned into our podcast.
Okay.
Each one of the chapters, which were really essays, each one of the chapters became an episode. And I think we've blown our way through those initial 20 or some that I wrote. And so now I'm writing more. But that's the story of our podcast. And we do it, really, it's cathartic for us to talk about this stuff.
Okay.
Out loud. It's almost like therapy for us. But also, we really want people to know there are a lot of people out there our age who are going through this exact thing that we're going through with our parents. And we want to let them know they're not alone.
Right. Yeah, and that was, you know, exactly my experience with the whole, I felt like I was alone and, you know, learning things from scratch and dealing with topics that hadn't ever been talked about between me and my peers or other family members. I mean, we just didn't deal with it. And then there was all of a sudden this major shift where it was absolutely necessary that it be talked about. And we all realized, we don't know anything, you know.
Nobody does when they come into this stuff.
Right. So, yeah, that I really like that you took your lack of knowledge and turned it into a podcast so that it could be knowledge for others. I mean, that's essentially what Living with Alzheimer's podcast is about as well. It's just I'm learning some things and hopefully I have guests on that help me learn more and listeners get to, you know, use what they can. And so, yeah, it's great. So,
right. And we point out over and over that we're not experts at this.
Right.
We make mistakes. Everybody,
yep.
When they're caregiving for their parents, when they're taking care of their parents, they make mistakes and I make them every day.
Right.
And we're not experts. We do bring experts onto our show as well. People who actually know things.
Right. Exactly.
Unlike us who are just kind of muddling through the same as everybody else.
But you know, one of the things that every expert that I've had on the show has been careful to say, and sometimes repeatedly say, is, you know, give yourself grace. You know, be
exactly.
Patient, be patient with yourself. You're going to make mistakes. You won't know exactly what to do. And you're going to muddle through as best you can, and it won't always be right. And so that really did give me some solace to the fact that, you know, I don't have to have all the answers or do it perfectly every day. And I certainly don't do it perfectly every day. I was just telling my partner the other day that, you know, I tend to lead with frustration when there's a change. Something I wasn't expecting or something that I wasn't expecting yet and it occurs, my first response tends to be, I'm irked, right? why are you doing this? And then I have to, you know, and so a couple days ago, I had to give myself a real talking to in the evening. I'm just like, look, she doesn't know. She's not doing this on purpose. You know, yes, that happened unexpectedly and it was irritating and it took a lot of extra work, but that might be the new normal and it's going to have to be okay because you got no other choice. I mean, that is, you know, the realities come along and you have to deal with them. And
right. And, you know, and when we point out quite frequently that, you know, not only is nobody trained for this, or none of us trained for this. We're not trained caregivers. And frankly, even trained caregivers, you know, everyone's different. Every elderly loved one is different. And so you may have experience with one thing, but not another. For instance, I don't have a ton of experience with Alzheimer's. My grandmother actually passed away from Alzheimer's. And so I saw a bit of it, but frankly, at the time I was too busy, you know, raising a couple of young kids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my mother had COVID delirium for several months, which mimicked severe dementia or Alzheimer's. So I got a taste of it. Trust me, I don't want to go through it again.
Right.
But every elderly loved one has their own issues that they go through. My mother's mind is in fairly good shape once she got past that delirium, which was scary. But, you know, her mind, I would say for, you know, she's about 85%. For an 83-year-old woman, that's not bad. It's with her, it's her body's failing her.
Right.
Just slowly, slowly fading away. And my mother-in-law is actually fairly with it too. But again, I, you know, there's no rule book, and even if somebody wrote up a rule book, it wouldn't matter.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. There are some guides out there though, thankfully. And, one of your guests, turned me on to, a guide in his talk that I've since gotten. It's a book, and I here I am talking about it, and now I'm not going to remember the title of it, which is bad for podcasts. I should have had that in my notes. I'll put it in the link later. But it is a really good resource. You had a gentleman on talking about dementia. And
That was a very, very good episode. He was a great guest.
Yes.
Great guest.
And he referenced a book that,
and I can't remember it either.
Right, but it's like it's like in its seventh edition now, and you know, the chapter outline is just amazing for all of the things that it has as recommendations for how you go about taking care of the various things you need to do with finances and health, communication, and all these kinds of things. So I'm really glad that that resource came along, you know, through your podcast. So that's, again, something I'll put in the, since I'm not remembering and you're not remembering the name of the book now, I'll put it in the show description because it was, you know, definitely a real value. So since I'm curious, Steve, since each of your parents have different needs and you guys have your own thing going on, and that whole Gen X, you know, is really that sandwich generation where you're taking care of kids and you're taking care of parents. What kinds of, you know, challenges have you guys faced as a couple while you're trying to balance all of that?
Right. And I didn't even bring up the sandwich generation because we do talk about that quite a bit on our podcast. We have two kids. They're actually both in college. But, you know, there are a lot of Gen Xers out there who waited a little longer than we did to have kids. And so they may have high schoolers or, geez, even middle schoolers. And particularly the younger Gen X folks. We're actually on the slightly older side. But, you know, some of the younger ones were born in the late 70s and even like 1980. So, you know, it's a challenge, you know, even for us who have two kids who are not in the house for a good chunk of the year. Dealing with making sure that we have the time to take care of our mothers and we have the time to, you know, guide our now, you know, young adult children and also work.
Right.
And there's just not sometimes enough hours in the day. My wife has a job with the state government. She works outside the home. It's a pretty big job. And I'm fortunate to work from home. I have for years. I've got a light schedule. The problem with that is it doesn't pay a lot of money.
Right.
But, you know, like I said, it's just finding time to get everything done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when there's emergencies in particular, like we had fairly recently, my mother had landed in the ICU for 4 days and was in the hospital for 4 more days after that and then was in rehab for 2 weeks. And you know, there's just a lot of time outside the home because of that. And you know, and even with relationships in general, like I said, my wife and I are more or less empty nesters at this point, but you know, just having time to have a relationship sometimes is a little difficult. And, you know, we're fortunate. Each of us understands what the other one is going through and we support each other, obviously, but you know, I'll give an example. Early in our marriage, my father had brain cancer. He died in 2001. And I wasn't his primary caregiver. That was my mother. But I was what we call a secondary caregiver. I went over and relieved her for, you know, multiple hours a few times a week just so she could get out of the house because he was, at this point, toward the end, he was, you know, in a hospital bed in the living room on hospice. And, you know, he was doing, he was just kind of slowly fading away and she couldn't leave the house unless somebody else was there.
Right.
So, That actually, created a bit of a difficulty in our young marriage. And because I wasn't there a good chunk of the week. And we got through it. It was fine. But it can really damage just the amount of hours that caregiving takes. It can damage a relationship. And we even noticed that. I mean, one other little example, it's kind of silly, but when my mother, right before my mother went into the hospital for her back surgery, there were several weeks there between the time that she had this spinal cord compression and the time that she got into the hospital. There was a bunch of stuff that needed to be done to prep for the surgery. It was 3 weeks that she was still living at home, but someone needed to be there 24 hours a day. So I would go over and I'd spend 5 days with her. My brother would come down and spend 2 days with her, and then he'd go back home. He lives a few hours away. And the way that it all worked out, when this spinal cord compression hit, my wife and I were on vacation we were actually celebrating our anniversary, and we were out of town. So we came back into town. Our son at the time was 17, and he had stayed home because he was in school, high school still. And I got home. I unpacked the bag from vacation, packed a new bag to go stay with my mother, and then went off and stayed with her for 5 days. A few days later, it was our actual anniversary, and my wife brought over takeout dinner for the four of us. My daughter was already off at college at this point, but anyway. After dinner, I said, "Hey, I need to run to the drugstore and get something. Do you mind staying? You guys mind staying with my mom?" And my son popped up and said, "Can I go along?" And I said, "What, do you want to go to the drugstore? Is there something you need?" He said, "No, I haven't seen you in 2 weeks." And that's the kind of thing. And again, he was 17. He understood the need for it, but he hadn't. We'd been gone for 4 nights for our vacation, and then I was gone for 5 days at my mother's. And I realized I hadn't seen my son. I'd talked to him. I texted with him. But, he wanted some time. And, if he'd been a younger kid, it might have been a bigger problem. Again, he understood it. But when you get neck deep in this stuff, you sometimes forget that there are people at home who miss you.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you also mentioned, how your dad's health was the issue, and your mom was his main caregiver, and then you were coming in and helping. In my parents' situation, my dad has, had years of health issues. Lymphoma being the biggest one that impacted his life, significantly. But he had so many other things going on as well. And, my siblings and I perceived them as so competent that when my mom was the one responsible to take care of his needs after an outpatient surgery or, some new development, we just figured they got it. And we weren't going and staying for many days to help out. And as I've said in previous podcasts, I wonder how much the stress of solo caregiving impacted her journey with dementia and maybe even, prompted an earlier start to her experience and with dementia, because stress is one of the triggers that can bring on dementia, worsen dementia, et cetera, as well, infections as well. But I'm really concerned about that. And so I think about situations like yours where you were stepping in to help. You had the wherewithal to think this is something that needs to be done, even though it had an impact on your family and your relationships. You thought to go and actually help your mom out. We weren't there. We weren't thinking. We were just like, she's a competent lady. She's got this. She will take care of this just fine. And she did. She just hated it, and it was stressful for her,
Well, and not everybody is cut out for it. And I'm not going to give examples on that, but I know people in my life who aren't.
Yeah, and honestly, my dad was not a very good patient. So he was a very stubborn man. So being cut out for it as a caregiver is one thing. Who you're caring for also has an impact on that.
It's true. It's true. And it's funny, though. You know, my parents were married for a long time. They kind of fought like cats and dogs at times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my father, when he was being cared for by my mother, I think he was a lot more stubborn with her.
Yes.
Than he was when I was the one in charge.
I would agree.
It was a lot more difficult, I think, with her.
That was
definitely. And he, with me, for whatever reason, I think he just went along with whatever I wanted to do and however I wanted to do it and didn't give me a hard time.
My dad and I finally had to make a pact with my dad after his stroke. He really needed help, and he was still being stubborn about things. And, you know, so my dad had vascular dementia following the stroke, and the one big difference that I would say I noticed in his dementia and my mom's is that he still could be logical. He was slower about processing a thing, but it was still a logical conclusion. My mom's logic is gone. You know, that was one of the first things that left. So reasoning with her, you know, you really had to think about how to do this in a happy way so that it didn't become an argument. My dad, it didn't matter if you were logical or not. If he didn't want to do it, he didn't want to do it. And then it was, you know, this issue. So I finally just had to say, look, you need help. I'm here able to give help. I want to honor the fact that you don't always want help. So I'm going to ask, do you want help with that? And if you say no, I'm going to leave you to your own devices.
Right.
And if you're super struggling with it, I'll maybe offer again, but I'm going to stay out of your way. And, you know, he nodded in agreement because at that point words were more difficult. But I really had to come to that point so that we weren't always having these battles because, you know, your dad was better with you and more, you know, stubborn with your mom. My dad was just stubborn with everybody.
Right.
You know? So he just wanted to do it his way, you know, and he lived his life that way
right.
all the time. Well, it didn't change.
And speaking of, you know, I mentioned my grandmother had Alzheimer's. So my father, like I said, passed away in 2001. He'd been fighting cancer for about a year and a half. And so that, you know, that came to an end. That caregiving journey, as we call it, came to an end when he passed away. But my mother still had her mother, my grandmother,
okay.
That they had moved down after her father had passed away some years before. So she was local as well. And at that point, she was just starting to show symptoms of something. Turns out it was Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And there was very little break for her. I call her an iron woman because she was dealing with a husband with brain cancer for a year and a half, which led right into a mother with Alzheimer's.
Right.
And she passed away in 2008. So that was another 7 years.
Yeah.
And then after that, she had a break where she could do whatever she wanted,
right.
whenever she wanted.
Right.
And she enjoyed herself for quite some time after that and lived alone and did that. But that was a rough, I mean, geez, 10 years.
Right.
For her.
Yeah.
With two different people.
Yeah.
I don't know how she did it without going crazy. I think she's told me before she nearly did go crazy a few times.
Yeah. I mean, my impression of caregiving before I came in was, you know, naive because I had no clue. But it is hard.
No, it's really hard.
I don't really want to do this again, even though I may, you know, find some other reason that I that's a need that I can fill. But man, it's not an easy ride. And I wish I had known that coming in, I would have prepared myself better. But also I would have helped some people around me, you know, in a different way. I had a neighbor when I was in Kansas City, a longtime neighbor who was a retired librarian. My mom was a retired librarian. And so we had that in common. We had great conversations. And then she, you know, was diagnosed with dementia. And her granddaughter came to live with her and take care of her. And you know, I didn't go over and offer help to relieve her or anything. I was right next door. And now that I'm doing it myself, I think, boy, I wish I could have been there, knowing that how hard this is and giving some relief for that person. So, I think about the same thing within families that, a spouse is, their partner has been diagnosed and they're on their own. Their kids, don't really know that it's really super hard and how do we, help relieve and all that kind of thing. So, that's one of the big things for me is that caregiving is difficult. And if you know somebody who is a caregiver, see if there's a way you can give them some relief, because even if it's an hour, they probably could use it.
And I always say, if you want to do that, do it. Absolutely do it. But don't go to them and say, how can I help? Make specific recommendations on what you can do. Oh, hey, can I come over on Sunday and just spend an hour there so you can go grocery shopping?
Yep.
Make a specific offer. Don't just say, oh, please let me know whenever I can help, because people will say, oh, thanks.
And right.
Probably not take you up on it. But if you make a specific recommendation, I can come over on Sunday, they might take you up on it.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And I know, those days when I went over to sit with my father, my mother would go grocery shopping. She would take her mother grocery shopping sometimes. And she said before, she and her mother, speaking of fighting like cats and dogs, they were oil and water. They mm-hmm. did not get along. Mm-hmm. They never did. My grandmother was a difficult woman. But she said, I never enjoyed the time with my mother more than when I was able to get out of the house for a few hours and go grocery shopping with her. And the other thing she would do, and I didn't know this, and I don't blame her one little bit, but there were sometimes I'd come over, she would just go to McDonald's with a book, get a big soda, and sit there for 3 hours.
Right.
And read her book. And that's great, because she needed it.
Yep. Yeah, just that chance to decompress them.
Right.
Yeah. So what are some of the key things that you've learned about caregiving as you've been doing your podcast from your own experiences? What are the big nuggets of learning?
Well, you said it already. Caregiving's hard. Mm-hmm. It is hard. It's emotionally hard. It's physically hard. It's just hard every way around. And we all need support. And that support can come from a variety of different places. If you have a spouse, hopefully they understand what you're going through. And if they don't understand firsthand, at least they understand secondhand and will listen to you. Mm-hmm. Cause we all need to blather on about this stuff. On our podcast, we do a little segment at the beginning. It's called How's Your Mom? And that came about from my wife and I have a back deck that we love, love, love. If it's more than 50 degrees, we'll be found out there.
Okay.
With a fire pit if necessary. And we'd sit down in the evenings, maybe with a little happy hour, and we would say to you, how's your mom doing? You visited her today. How's she doing? And we instituted that. It was basically like 10 minutes each. And then we're going to try to talk about something else, because caregiving can swallow up your entire life. You need to talk about other things. But going back though, we all need support, whether it's a spouse, whether it's a friend. I highly recommend therapy. I've never really been the type who wants to go to a therapist, and I haven't very much, but there was one point in the middle of that crisis when my mother was in the hospital and in therapy and in rehab and this, that, and the other, where I was losing my mind and did go sit with a therapist for about an hour. And it was one of the best things I ever did.
Yep.
So it doesn't matter where that support comes from. You can't do this alone. You will go nuts. And I have a good friend who was a former college roommate actually. And, she's going through it a lot right now. And I think she actually is losing her mind. I was trying to talk her down off the proverbial ledge, a couple of weeks ago. And I don't think she's getting a lot of support from siblings. And her mother is difficult. And, you can lose your mind doing this stuff when it gets really hot and heavy in this emergency time in particular. And I think with her, it's constant emergencies.
Yeah, that's hard. And yeah, I'll go with you on the counselor part. I met weekly and now it's biweekly, every other week, because biweekly could mean twice a week.
It can.
So strange, our language.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, that third that non-opinionated third party, you know, they don't have anything vested in it other than your own well-being and the perspective that they offer. It's been really helpful to me.
Yeah, and if you find a good one, they'll call you out on it when you're being stupid.
Right.
No, yes. That's stupid. Stop that.
Yeah.
You're an idiot.
Yeah. How is that working for you?
Right? Exactly.
And how is that working for you? Would be a common question from my therapist. So, yeah, and my siblings are there to help. My partner definitely, you know, helps talk me down. And, you know, without those supports, I would not be well, you know, this, because it's so disorienting. You know, the caregiving role keeps shifting, and so many unexpected things happen, you know, and how to prioritize and remembering to take care of yourself during all of that, and when, you know, do I have to set this aside in the what would be perfect for the caregiving with what is actually sustainable? You know, those kinds of things are really, I would not be able to do it all on my own. There's just no way. So, yeah. Anything else that really came up as key learnings for you, even if it's specific to your moms?
You know, in terms of resources, where you can get some help.
Yeah.
One of our favorite type of people in the whole world is a medical social worker.
Okay.
You can find these in hospitals. You can find these in, sometimes in assisted living, we'll have one. Quite frequently, nursing homes will have them. You can also, you know, if your loved one is not in one of those facilities, you can contact your primary care physician and get a referral. You can contact your insurance company and get a referral. They are just amazing sources of information on where you can get help.
Okay.
There's a lot of information out there that most people don't know about. We did an episode. It started out as being about long distance caregiving. So, you know, what if your elderly loved one lives on the other side of the country,
right,
and they don't want to move and you don't want to move? What do you do?
Yeah. Right.
And we had a medical social worker on there, actually somebody we knew. She just spewed out so much information that we had never heard of.
Okay.
And, you know, resources.
Can you,
if
you give
your
me
loved
a trinket?
You know, resources. If your loved one was a veteran,
okay,
there's a lot of stuff. Every county in the country in the United States has to have an area agency on aging, and they have to have a website. And some counties, it's literally just a PDF with phone numbers and places you can call. Other ones with more populous counties, it's going to be a lot more than that. But it gives you places you can call, and there may be opportunities for respite care that are paid for by the county or partially paid for by the county that you don't even know about.
Yeah.
And respite care is so important if you're the type that's taking care of your elderly loved one 24/7.
Yeah.
Like they live with you or you live with them. So respite care is incredibly important. So I highly recommend that everyone kind of have a medical social worker in your back pocket. My wife and I, or rather my wife and her mother, fairly recently met with a medical social worker, and my mother-in-law actually thought they were looking for a place to stow her, and that was not the case at all. She lives independently with a lot of help from my mother, or from my wife and her brother. But really, they were just looking for resources, and there were a number of them that were really helpful to them. So I'd highly recommend talking with one.
Okay. So you mentioned that assisted living facilities might have them. I'm wondering if my primary care physician has one.
You should be able to get a referral that way.
Yeah,
that's really probably the easiest way to go, is contact your primary care physician and they'll put you in touch with it.
And just ask for a medical social worker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, because honestly, I didn't know that about counties. The county that I'm living in now has a senior you know, millage, you know, so some monies that are from citizens that actually are specific for senior care. And I knew that they had, as a county, some published resources, but I did not realize that every county in the states
has it's a requirement by law, federal law.
That's new information to me. So anybody can look for this.
Yes.
Any other resources that you've come along?
Really, I think it's just, you know, if you come across someone who's doing the same thing you are,
yeah,
just make a good contact. It's right. Like I said, it's just, it's good to talk to somebody who understands what you're going through.
Right.
And I'm, like I said, I'm fortunate to have a wife who is literally going through the same thing that I am. And we, you know, I help with her mother. She helps a bit with mine. And you know, it's kind of a family thing, but not everybody has that.
Right.
And there are a lot of people, in fact, you know, maybe they're not married or their spouse just doesn't really understand. They may have siblings who aren't involved, don't want to be involved, or run away at the sight of any emergency whatsoever. And you don't have to be alone. Right. There are support groups out there, whether they're in person or even on social media. I found that to be a little bit helpful as well. So I think it's like I said, just try to make connections with people who understand. And, you know, if you can't find anybody, talk to a therapist.
Right. Yeah, the Alzheimer's Association usually has a presence everywhere also, and they have a number of support groups for caregivers, and many of those are virtual, especially since the pandemic made virtual so common. A lot of things went to virtual and then have stayed virtual since. And then here in Grand Rapids, there is actually a independent daycare preschool that uses that setting as a place for people with dementia to go and work in the, they volunteer in the preschool, and their spouses have like a cafe essentially to go.
Oh, and, that's great. And, I love that.
You know, sit down and chat, you know, so while their spouse with dementia is being activated with kids, which typically is, you know, a lovely situation.
It is.
They get to talk to each other about their trials and travails that particular week. And, you know, so that's unique to hear, but hopefully that kind of thing is available elsewhere. Just a place for, you know, the person with dementia to be activated and the people that are doing the caregiving to, you know, collaborate and chat. And so, you know, those kinds of things, you're right. Being alone in this is probably the hardest thing. So finding ways to connect with others is, you know, a really valuable thing that I found it extremely valuable. So, Steve, the Caregiving Gen X Style is about caregiving in general, not dementia specific. You do have some dementia things on there.
Correct.
And where are you going from here? What else is the podcast going to bring to listeners?
Well, we had been doing more guests. Scheduling is a bit of a difficult thing with our, yep, with our schedules. And, you know, lately with the emergencies I've had to deal with, it makes it a little more difficult as well. But we have a lot more topics we're going to be covering. The next episode, well, I don't know when this is going to come out, but the next episode we're going to put out is going to be all about secondary caregivers.
Okay.
And that was actually a listener suggestion for us, and not something I'd really thought about talking about, because I didn't really think secondary caregivers, which are, you know, they're backup folks. Well, we did an episode talking about all the different types of caregivers, and there's primary caregivers, which would be you, which would be me. There's secondary caregivers. Those are the people like I was when my father was sick, where they, you know, they come in and help, you know, in bits and pieces and here and there. And then there's backup caregivers, which I started to talk about. But backup caregivers, it's like the backup quarterback. If everything's going fine, you don't even know they exist. They have to be asked to help. But anyway, we'll be talking about the secondary caregivers and how to be a good secondary caregiver.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of folks, they want to help, but they don't really know how can I be involved? That my sister's taking care of everything. Mm-hmm. So just, you know, making sure that you're doing it well and that you're being supportive. And, you know, we're going to be talking about a lot of other things. We're going to do an episode soon on with an elder lawyer because nice. There's so many legal issues you have to deal with.
Right.
We've got a lot of topics coming up.
Yeah. And thankfully, we had taken care of a lot of the legal stuff prior to my parents being diagnosed with dementia. They just had that on their mind that they wanted to take care of all that. My dad had so many health issues, he figured he was going to be going out, and he was like, I know we need to take care of this and this and this. And honestly, I think my dad's stubbornness led to a lot of efficiencies that a lot of families probably don't have. And so then you're stuck with it after the fact, and, you know, when it's harder to accomplish, and, you know, when caregiving is the primary thing that needs to be focused on, and all, you know, legal stuff seems like loose ends, you know, so that sounds like important stuff.
Right. And what concerned me with your listeners with Alzheimer's is once they get to a point, they're not able to legally sign things anymore.
Right. Yep.
So, I mean, this stuff needs to be done soon.
Yep. Absolutely. And even that whole conversation about how do I want care going forward. So, you know, my kids are now all adult age. And so it's time for me to communicate with them about how I would like my caregiving landscape to look like and see, you know, where they all fall into that now, take care of some of that legal stuff now. So even if you can do it before it's necessary would be the great time to do it. But after right. the fact, yeah, you're right. So do it as soon as you can, for sure.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've thought a lot about it as well. And I really hope that we don't give our kids a hard time about this stuff later on down the way, but I'm sure we will.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of the way it works.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been joking around a lot lately. I mean, my wife said, geez, I hope, you know, when we're older and need to go into a facility that we don't fight our kids about it. And I said, shoot, send me to assisted living now, put the grippy socks on me, let me play bingo all day. It doesn't sound that bad.
Right. Yep. And see, that was the thing with my folks. There was this time where they knew they needed help. And my dad had these additional health issues going on. My mom hadn't been diagnosed yet. She was showing signs of forgetfulness that, you know, was not, she was being evaluated, but it wasn't being diagnosed as dementia at that time. But my dad saw the writing on the wall and it, you know, said we need to do all these things. And so we started talking about assisted living, and I took them on some tours. You know, my sister and my brother and I would go look at a facility, and we'd get it down to, you know, just a couple that maybe we should have them visit. And he was all in until he got a streak of independent stubbornness again. And he was all suddenly, oh, I'm not going to go. It's not going to happen. And it actually took a activity together. We were sitting down doing the cards that they, you know, traditionally sent out at, you know, holiday time. Mm-hmm. And so it was a simple thing of we were having them sign the card. I had address labels already printed out, you know, all this. And so it was stuffing the envelope, putting the label on, putting a stamp on, and sealing the envelope, you know, process, right? We were just at a little assembly line. It was me, my mom, and my dad. And so, you know, 5 days previous was when my dad had this conniption that, nope, we're fine. We're going to stay right here. We're not going to assisted living. And so when we sat down and did that, and my mom would get lost in the process, and her job was simple. And he kept watching that happen. She'd do, you know, three or four envelopes in a row would be fine. And then all of a sudden an envelope would come along and she'd stare at it like it was a foreign object. Like, what are we doing here? And so I'd demonstrate again and she'd get it good for three or four more envelopes. And then there would be this stutter again. And after we finished with that process, my dad looked at me and said, "We're ready.
It's time."
Yep.
Yeah.
And so I think just spending time with your folks in, you know, normal, low-key ways. I'm not trying to prove anything to you. We're just going to do these things together. The other thing I did was I said, "Okay, guys, show me how you make a meal. I'll just be here in the kitchen with you. And you guys prep dinner. I'll help if you need some help and tell me you need help." Man, they couldn't even read the directions.
Well, you know what's funny? What you're describing there, I was talking about medical social workers.
Yeah.
They will come into your loved one's home sometimes and do a home visit and kind of evaluate how they do things and what assistance they might need. And what you just described there is actually something that the medical social worker we talked about that she will do. Show me how you get through the day, how you do this, how you do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's that evaluation is really tough. And like you said, though, it's kind of important for the loved one to know, where are they? What is their baseline now?
Right. Yeah, because my assumption had been they were completely competent.
Yeah.
What I learned later after the meal making debacle was they couldn't make a meal. They could do breakfast and they could do lunch because those were simpler things, bowl of cereal, a sandwich, something like that. But actually prepping a meal, and my dad loved to cook, prepping a meal was beyond them. And they were getting in the car and going to a restaurant. That's how they were getting by.
Right.
We did not know that. My siblings and I had no idea.
Right. And, you know, you're talking about fighting the whole assisted living thing. I had brought it up to my mother. So I mentioned she's had three back surgeries, with the third one being the emergency one. I don't know where the back problems come from, but I mentioned it to her a couple of times here and there because her mobility was slowly going downhill. And I said at one point, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 months before the spinal cord issue happened, you know, would you think about going into an assisted living places? There's a lot of nice places around here. And she said, "No, I want to stay in my house as long as I can."
Yep.
And she literally did. She couldn't stay in that house one more day. She was literally incapable of taking care of herself at that point without a lot of help. Mm-hmm. And I don't recommend that.
Right.
I don't recommend waiting until the last minute when you have to find a place today. And we were fortunate. We found a good place. And I mean, the thing that I've learned about assisted living is that none of them are perfect. None of them are anywhere near perfect.
Right.
They all have their own problems. And a lot of it is due to staff turnover.
Yep.
Yeah, both at the bottom and the top. But you find a good place, you do the best you can. But it's better not to do it at the last minute.
Yes. Yeah, agree. And that was the situation. We went to assisted living and they did. Unfortunately, it was right during the pandemic. I mean, we got them in on the end of February and then the whole lockdown started in March
my goodness.
Of 20.
Oh, so you were there the whole time.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they were in assisted living and then my dad passed during, that same year. And then it was clear that my mom was totally isolated by the pandemic dynamic, one, and also the fact that my dad was no longer there. And so that was when we were like, what else? And so I came to live with her. We had not sold their house yet. We had the opportunity to get her back into her home, but with me here because, by herself, there's no way it would have worked. And
right.
So that was how our scenario turned out, and everybody's going to be different. But I think that whole hanging on to independence is a real difficult dynamic to deal with. I want to live here forever is one of those, you know, that's a level of independence that once you give that up and go to assisted living there, I know that they felt like that was a loss for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no longer being able to drive was a huge one.
Right.
My dad, who had, you know, been a driver's ed instructor and
oh, wow.
was an extremely, you know, competent driver. There was a point at which we just had to say, Dad, you can't drive anymore. And he was like, oh, I'm a driver. You know,
it
was
fine. That.
Right. And I hear that so often. It's a huge battle. Those car keys are a big symbol of independence.
And yeah. Fortunately, I didn't have that problem. Once my mother lost control of her right leg, she knew she can't get into the car
right.
by herself.
Yeah.
In fact, getting her into the car at all is quite a struggle.
Yeah.
So, we didn't have that fight. She basically said, well, what are we going to do with the car? I can't drive it anymore.
Right.
So, my mother-in-law does still drive a little.
Okay.
She's been good about it. She doesn't unless she really has to. She waits for other people to drive her places. And really that's kind of how it should be these days.
Yeah. Yes. Right. And again, if you can get over that hurdle of the loss of independence, you know, because that's and maybe the social worker comes, that medical social worker comes in handy
maybe
then as well. So, but yeah, so many challenges in the caregiving landscape. And so I appreciate that you are doing, what you can, and you and your wife with your podcast to help listeners out. And that's what we're trying to do here as well. So is there anything else you would like to leave listeners with, Steve?
You know, I think we've covered an awful lot. If you're looking for our show, it's Caregiving Gen X Style. You can just Google it. You'll find it. We're on all the different podcast services, same as you are, I'm sure. And
yep.
we're going to be having Christoph on the show in the coming months. You know, with all the emergencies lately, it's been a little hard to get it scheduled. But, if you go check out our show and stick with it, you'll hear Christoph.
Looking forward to that, too. So. Steve, thank you so much for joining today. Really appreciate all of your insights, and thank you for sharing. And tell your wife, hey, and I see your cat. He's being very mellow.
Yes.
He didn't
That's
interrupt
one of the
once.
Cats. The one you didn't hear was upstairs howling earlier, but thankfully
okay.
my microphone wasn't picking that up.
I had one banging outside the door earlier, but they gave up, so it wasn't too bad today.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks again. Have a
All
great
right,
day.
Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate
All right.
it.
All right, thanks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Living with Alzheimer's. Please visit the Living with Alzheimer's website at lwalz.com, where you can subscribe to the show and find all the resources we discuss in podcast episodes. We'll see you next time on the Living with Alzheimer's podcast.